taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Welcome there, everyday Americans. You've reached the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution, and we teach a rising generation to be free. You know, Santa Anna said that those who refuse to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Well, today I have the privilege of having with us Dr. Ming Wang. Let me play for you the audio of an introduction from a video clip that Dr. Wang sent me.
Through his own tenacity and his parents' tireless efforts to provide a chance of freedom for their son, Ming eventually made his way to America with $50 in his pocket and an American dream in his heart, where against all odds, he would earn a PhD in laser physics and graduate magna cum laude with the highest honors from Harvard Medical School and MIT. From Darkness to Sight is a story of one man's inspirational journey of turning fear, poverty, persecution, and prejudice into healing and love for others. It demonstrates how focus, determination, humility, and profound faith can inspire a life that, in turn, impacts that of countless others.
Wang Foundation for Sight Restoration has helped patients from over 40 states in the U.S. and 55 countries with all sight restoration surgeries performed free of charge. Dr. Wang was named the Kiwanis Nashvillian of the Year for his lifelong dedication to help blind orphan children from around the world. And his film Sight is based on Dr. Wang's autobiography From Darkness to Sight with co-star Greg Kinnear. And that, I believe, is coming out, Dr. Wang, early next year. Dr. Wang, thank you for joining us. It truly is a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Paul.
I had the privilege of meeting Dr. Wang about a year ago. We both participate in the 917 Society, and I was so moved by his story and his understanding and perspective that he gives. So for my audience, please, would you give us a little bit of your history, kind of flesh out that introduction a bit?
Thank you. Again, appreciate to be on your show, Paul. I grew up in China in the 1960s in a period called Cultural Revolution, where the government shut down all universities and colleges of entire China for 10 years, from 1966 to 1976. And they forcefully deported every single high school graduate to some of the poorest part of the country and condemned each one of us a life sentence of hard labor and poverty. So during the 10 years of Cultural Revolution, or really Cultural Holocaust, they sent away to labor camp 20 million high school graduates. So I grew up during that period of time. In 1974, I was 14, and I finished my ninth grade. I grew up in a very poor family. The combined salaries of my parents, the combined salaries for both of them every month were only $15. So mom and dad always said, study hard, me. Education was the only way to get out of poverty. So I studied really hard, and I was a straight A student when I finished my ninth grade at age 14, 1974. Looking forward to attending 10th grade and beyond when the deportation order came down to me from the government. Not just me, 20 million others during the 10 years of Cultural Revolution. So I got kicked out of school, and I was never allowed to go back. And I faced with this devastating fate of being sent away to labor camp for life. And in order to escape the devastating fate of being sent away to labor camp for life, I found out that if I could play a music instrument, or if I could dance, I might be getting into what they call the communist song and dance propaganda troupe. If I could do that, I might be able to avoid being sent away to labor camps and being allowed to stay in the cities, because communist government still needed musicians and dancers in the cities. Then something happened. The Communist government discovered that I was playing a music instrument and learning dancing with an ulterior motive, really not for music or dance per se, but to avoid being sent away to labor camp. So they stopped my music instrument playing and dancing practice. It's interesting, Paul, that these days here in America, sometimes friends come and talk to me and say, oh, being so nice, you have a hobby, you can play an instrument, you can dance. It must be nice to have these hobbies. You know what I say? I told them this. I learned this music instrument dancing not for as a hobby. I learned it to survive. So I grew during that period of time. So fine, I tried everything, tried to avoid being sent away to labor camp, all failed. So my fate was labor camp for life, just like 20 million others. When I was about to be actually sent away to labor camp, 1976, I got lucky. The dictator died. So all of a sudden, China woke up, realizing what a tragic mistake it has made by having shut down universities and colleges of an entire country for the 10 years, and by having sent away to labor camp 20 million high school graduates. All their lives were destroyed. So they stopped the Cultural Revolution, reopened all the colleges in 1976. And mom and dad came home one day, they said, Ming, you might be go back to school. I thought I'd never be able to hear that in my lifetime. I said, when? Mom said, maybe tomorrow. I said, wow, should I go back to ninth grade? Because 3 years ago, I was 14. I got kicked out of school after ninth grade. In the last 3 years, I've not been studying. I've been out of school. I've been playing music, learning dancing, all to avoid being sent away to labor camp. Now there's a chance to go back to school. Should I go back to ninth grade? Since I never studied 10th, 11th, 12th. Guess what my dad said? He said, no, higher. I said, 10th? He said, no, higher. I said, 11th? He said, no, higher. I said, wait a minute, you want to go back to school, but you want to jump 3 years ahead overnight from 9th to 12th, having never studied 10th, 11th, 12th. He said, yes. I said, why? He said, only 12th graders are allowed to participate in the college entrance exam. The first college entrance exam in China in 10 years. Because during the 10 years of Cultural Revolution, 1966 to 1976, all universities and colleges were shut down for their 10 years. I said, you're crazy. How could I do that? Jumping 3 years overnight and try to, you know, from 9 to 12 and try then to compete against 12 graders for that 1% chance getting to college. Only 1% of the 12 graders that year could get into college. I said, you guys are crazy. Mom said, we're not crazy. She asked, how long did the Communist government shut down colleges? I said, 10 years, from 1966 to 1976. She said, okay. When 1976, all right, they didn't reopen all the colleges, all right, but it's a guarantee they will not shut down college again next year for another 10 years. I said, Mom, you're right. It's a dictatorship. They can do whatever they want. There's no freedom. No freedom. She said, you got it. Either you try to go to college this year or you may never be able to. So I knew I had to do it. I got so stressed out. How could I do the impossible, jumping 3 years ahead overnight and compete against the other 12 graders for that 1% chance of getting to college? Mom and Dad said, we're going to help you, they said. So during daytime, they were working very hard. At night, they borrowed some old review questions. But we were so poor that, remember I said the combined salaries for both of them were only $15 a month. $15. So we didn't have money to Xerox. So what Mom and Dad did, they found little pieces of papers throughout the house and using pencils, put these review questions onto these little pieces of papers. And every night, drill me with these little pieces of papers containing those review questions. They made me study 19, 20, 21 hours a day. I almost killed myself studying. But I was doing everything possible because I did not want to return to the darkness. My autobiography, From Darkness to Sight, which has been made into a film, Sight now, talked about that when I eventually made it to the examination building on the day of the exam, I almost collapsed from exhaustion. I did barely get into college, all right, but I did not want to have anything to do with the dictators anymore. I've suffered enough. So 1982, with $50 borrowed from a visiting American professor, with a student visa, with an English-Chinese dictionary, knowing no one in this country could hardly speak English, I was dropped at National Airport, Washington, D.C. I was nearly penniless, but I was happy. Why? I had the freedom.
So you're talking, you know, I don't know how many people, I'm old enough to have memories of the stories coming out of China. You know, I'm reminded that there are millions of people that want to come to this country, not millions of people that want to get out. And it's stories like that that are why when you see what happens when freedom is gone, when decisions are made for you, when the idea of your own personal liberty is taken away from you, your opportunities are taken away. It's hard for someone like me who was born and raised in America to truly understand what it must have been like for you as a boy with a few dollars in your pocket in an English-Chinese dictionary and an American airport going, what now? You know, you knew that the dictatorship was not the way to go. I assume you realized it would eventually lead to your death. Here you are in a strange land with strange people and strange customs and strange ideas. How did how did you process this stranger in a strange land type situation?
Yeah, I mean, it was an exhilarating, it's a liberating experience being able to come to America, to have completely feeling completely foreign to me, the sense of freedom. You know, I remember one of the first thing I heard after I came to America was the expression that they say, you know, they asked me what does America represent. They told me that America represents a statement like this: I may not agree with what you say, but I would defend to my death your right to say it. I mean, to me, it's incredible. It's incredible. You know, I take care of people every day with vision problems. The people who appreciate sight the most are those who used to be blind. So people who appreciate freedom the most are those who used to not have freedom. And I used to not have freedom. So I appreciate freedom so much. So when I give a presentation, which is entitled Appreciating Freedom in America by Finding Common Ground Among Us as Americans, it's like I used to be blind. I come to share with all the sighted folks here how precious sight is. I'm someone who used to not have freedom. I come to share with all the folks here in America who always have freedom how precious freedom is.
Yeah, it's that, what's the saying, familiarity breeds contempt. You know, a fish doesn't understand water. A fish doesn't know what it means to be wet. Someone who has been, like I said, me, I've lived my entire life in this country. And as I look back, I see the changes, but it's perspective. To someone who has never had that freedom, it's got to be a culture shock. When I was a young boy, I lived in New York City, and the stories I heard from some of my schoolmates, they had been immigrants. They came over from all parts, you know, Soviet Union, China, Vietnam, Cambodia, Rwanda, and the amazement at the choices, the ability to simply have a choice. And when I see people in America saying, well, you don't really deserve a choice, you don't need a choice, we'll make the choice for you, there's a part of me that just kind of crinkles up inside. And again, I've lived with this all my life. I can't imagine what it's like to someone who understands the consequences of removing choice, removing liberty, removing opportunity, including the opportunity to strive, the opportunity to fail, and the opportunity to succeed. Now, you've become a very successful man. Like I said, as you said, you showed up with $50 in your pocket. You were a good student in China. You were able to assimilate 3 years worth of education in a very short time. And I've seen some of what's happened to you since that time in some of your presentations I've seen. Tell the audience, just so they understand, how amazing this country is to take somebody who had nothing but was willing to work and risk, and then take that and use that to give back to others.
You know, we always talk about opportunities in different countries. We used to talk about opportunities for jobs, opportunity for career, opportunity for making a living, making money. But when I compare America with many other countries, including China, and in many countries are economically growing, right, fast, including China, economic is improving rapidly. But I think the most profound distinction of America, say compared with China and other countries, is the opportunity for the heart. Opportunity for you as a human being to be freed, to be free and to express your emotion, your feeling. That it is almost unimaginable for most Americans to even try to fathom what it's like not being able to express one's opinion. You know, I was with the team that filmed the film Site, based on my autobiography from Darkness to Sight in Vancouver, Canada, 6 months ago. And as I mentioned, the film, as you mentioned, the film will be coming out early next year, co-starring Greg Kinnear. That I was with the director, cinematographer, we're sitting in a group, and we're talking about, you know, was a part of the Cultural Revolution in China and how to depict that artistically, powerfully through film. And I looked at the director and cinematographer and everybody. I said, do you know how lucky you are? Because they are imagining artistically how they can do this way, acting that way, put a scene, the plot this way, that way. And they said, what do you mean, that we're lucky? I said, here in America and Canada, you can actually make a movie based on your artistic imagination, the storytelling, such a sense of freedom. If this film were made, say, in China, you don't have 99.999% of freedom. I mean, your script will be scrutinized. I mean, the entire process of filming will be tightly controlled. And you will not be able to freely create artistically this, a film like this. And they really did not understand what I was talking about. They look at me as if I was from Mars, you know, speaking a totally different language. So the lack of understanding of what it's like is to be not free, and hence the taking for grantedness of folks here in America, the freedom, you know, to get an education, the freedom to be what you want to be. I mean, you still have to put your weight. I mean, you have the responsibility as the citizen of this great country, but you're free. You're free to pursue your happiness. The lack of freedom, the lack of opportunity for heart is the ultimate difference between America and so many other countries.
You know, we've mentioned your movie, we've mentioned your book, and I certainly want to give you an opportunity to tell people where they can find out more, because, as I said, I've had the great opportunity to see you speak a couple of times, and I'm looking forward to the movie. I enjoyed the book. I enjoyed the way you tell your story, because one thing that you have brought to attention that I think is being lost in a lot of America today is we tend to focus on our differences. You've got the donkeys versus the elephants. You've got the urban versus the rural. And we end up so focused on what makes us different. And sadly, on how do we prevent the those be, that are different from being different? How do we you know make sure we get our way? That we forget that we have such, you know, there is a lot that's the same. You know, most people around the world, they like you said, they're interested in their careers, their futures, and their children and their family, and you know, we almost dehumanize people we disagree with. So it's easier for us to disagree with. And you've put together an organization that reminds us there's much more in we have much more in common than we have differences.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, thank you for asking that question. About that, when COVID arrived in America in March of 2020, I sat in the backyard with my pastor, Dr. Rice Brooks, and we're talking about, and I said, you know, Pastor Rice, a virus called COVID-19 is about to arrive on US continent because it's been causing so many damages, and so much damages in so many other parts of the world, such as China and Italy. And even though we have the best healthcare system here in America, and we are one of the wealthiest nations with all the resources, I'm afraid that we may not be able to handle this COVID well. And he said, why do you feel that way? I said, our society here in America is so hyper-polarized, which means two things. One is we're increasingly fixated on our differences rather than appreciating what we all have in common. And also, that means we're increasingly focused on power alliances rather than the merit of the issue itself. And COVID is a medical issue. It's not a political one. The virus doesn't care if you're blue or red, it will infect you anyway. After a year and a half since then, March 2020, unfortunately, my fear, my prediction became true. Indeed, we as a nation have not been able to do a very good job at all in dealing with the COVID, with all the large number of infections and the death and such a destructive situation to our economy and livelihood. And then we have to learn something as a nation. We have to learn something, because if we don't learn why, what went wrong, we will not be able to cope with the next crisis, right? So among all the reasons we think about why America has done among the worst among industrialized countries in COVID-19 management, while we have the best healthcare system with the wealth. Among all the reasons, in my personal opinion, the what sits on the top, the number one reason to account for our failure in dealing with the pandemic is the polarization, the increased fixation on our differences rather than appreciating what we have in common. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're white or black or brown, ethnicity, religion, background. I mean, we all have much in common. You know, we have differences, but what do we have in common? Well, we're all Americans. We all love this country. We all understand that the interest of the nation, our love for our Christ, God, should be above the interest of any political party. You know, that's our common ground. And second manifestation of the polarization is the increased focus on power alliances rather than the merit of issue. It's a medical issue, not a political one. So that political polarization of a medical issue has resulted in a tremendous confusion in our public in terms of understanding what are the truthful message, what are the right thing to do medically to protect ourselves and to protect our family. That political polarization of a medical issue, in my opinion, is the number one reason that what we have done so unexpectedly poorly in the COVID management, given that we have the best healthcare system, we have one of the country with the most wealthiest country. So COVID has revealed an even bigger virus in us, and that is the virus of polarization. And the vaccine against the virus of polarization is Common Ground. So Dr. Weisbrooks and I, since March 2020, we founded a nonprofit organization called Common Ground Network to study how we can find common ground. And we studied scripture almost every Saturday for several hours for 75 Saturdays in a row for a year and a half. And we recently published the Common Ground Bible Study, which is it's a little booklet, aggregate every part of the scripture that has to do with common ground. And we realize that it's Christ teaching to us, calling to us. It's imperative as Christians to be able to find a common ground with people who are different from us, have different viewpoints. And not only is Christ calling to us to find a common ground to reach out beyond ourselves, to find to build a bridge, to form a relationship with others, but also Bible also teaches us how to find a common ground. So we formulated the Common Ground Seeking Steps, STEPS. S, see the common ground. You got to see it. You know, it's like husband and wife in a marriage. Your marriage will not be good if husband and wife keep on saying, hey, what's our differences? You know, but on the other hand, if husband and wife turn around, change the attitude and say, hey, honey, what do we have in common? The marriage will turn totally to a totally different direction, much more productive and happy marriage. So you got to see there is common ground, no matter how different human being we are to each other. That's S. T is trait.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Doctor. No, we are running out of time, and I want to make sure you have time to tell my audience where they can find out more about you. Trust me, I will extend the invitation. I would love to have you back because it's a wonderful conversation. But tell my audience where they can find out more about you and your organizations and your movie and books.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And there's just one website, www.drmingwang.com, which is drmingwang.com. And just to finish that sentence, is Common Ground Seeking Steps, STEPS. See common ground, trade places, empathy, pay the price, and finally see common ground put into action. And Christ, Jesus Christ, was our inspiration to formulate the Common Ground Seeking Steps, because his life is the ultimate example of the Common Ground Seeking.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Dr. Wang. A pleasure as always. I do want to have you back. You know, maybe we can find some more common ground to discuss as well as to learn from each other what makes us unique. Again, for more information, go to www.drmingwang.com. I'll put a link in the description. And Dr. Wang, thank you for your time. Please have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it.
Now, before I head off to break, I want to remind you to check out HealthyCell.com. They've reinvented the vitamin, no longer the fistful of pills, an easy-to-use travel-ready gel pack you can either take directly or mix with food and drink. It makes it easier to take your vitamins, and these vitamins are designed to feed your body at a cellular level. Try multiple. We were talking about COVID. Well, try the Immune Super Boost. Help your body's natural immune system fight off COVID or any other diseases you may encounter. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com/outloud for that 20% discount.
Let's get real. Let's get loud. On America Out Loud Talk Radio, this is McCullough Report. Are you tired of your tired vitamins? Consider Healthy Cell. These are pill-free vitamins that are in convenient gel packs. I like the Focus and Recall supplement. I use this a lot. You know, your brain uses a lot of energy, and it depends on a variety of micronutrients and vitamins. Boost your short-term focus and long-term brain power with Healthy Cell's Focus and Recall vitamins. So go to healthysoul.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any Healthy Soul product. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Wong. It was so informative, so powerful. I certainly want to have him back on because there's so much information there. Talking about growing up in communist China, in the Cultural Revolution, living without freedom, without opportunity, without rights. And I found this article about what's been going on in Australia. And the author, Kathy Chamberlain, has joined us. She's a four-time startup business owner. She's a published author of self-help books featured on CNN Worldwide. She's a founder of the nation's first all-female construction company and is a Florida licensed state building contractor, sought-after speaker, best-selling author, activist, contributor to the Salem Media Radio, and talk show producer and on-air talent for Voice of the Nation on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Kathy, thank you for joining us here today.
You are so welcome, Paul. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for the invite.
We may turn you into a regular recurring guest because your articles, they seem to be so prescient and so capturing of what's going on in America today. And it, you know, I think about the history of the Cultural Revolution in China, and then what you talked about in your recent article about what's going on in Australia. Can you give my listeners kind of a little follow up on an idea of what's been going on?
Sure, and I really like to stay on top of what other countries are doing, especially today, because things are moving so quickly. In fact, I wrote 2.5 years ago about Venezuela and really forewarned the coming of what happened there here in our country. And I've written articles about Hong Kong because they're really microcosms, Paul, of you just have to look at what is going on in these countries and see where we're headed if we don't change directions. But in Australia, here you have a country, a Western democracy that nobody would have even guessed a year ago that it would end up in such dire straits. But today, if you just look at what's going on in the news, there are so many riots over there. So many, actually, they're starting off as peaceful protests. People have just had enough of the COVID restrictions. And somewhere back a couple months ago, they found one case of COVID and just so overreacted. It's incredible. They're confining people to their homes. The people can't even leave their homes without very strict fines. I just got off the phone with an Australian, believe it or not, shortly before you our interview started here, and asked him, what's it like now? He said, things are moving so quickly, he can't even keep up with it. He actually left Australia a couple of weeks ago, but he, of course, because he's Australian, he's following things very, very closely. But he told me that people are confined to their homes, and if they're caught leaving outside of what's equivalent to their kilometers, about 2.5 miles, they're fined $5,000. And they have apps now over there that basically, we actually have apps here too, so the listeners know, this is not just in foreign countries, but we actually have these. You hear a lot about contact tracing. These are apps that can discover whether or not, or report, I should say, whether or not you're in the midst of somebody who might have COVID. So these apps are really sinister because they sound great. They always sound great, you know, when the left gets a hold of some new technology, and then they turn into a basically a weapon of war against the people. So it was interesting to speak with him. He's right now in New York, of all places, and en route to Spain. So it was kind of interesting to find out what the hoops that he has to go through just to travel from country to country. But right now they have a moratorium. When they shut down the country a couple months ago, after just one or a couple in each state, their state, they have states too, I think about eight, I'm not 100% sure there, but like Queensland, that's where he's from, or Melbourne. These are all separate entities, and now they're all apparently bordered off. It's interesting, isn't it, how we can put up borders real quick when we want to close ourselves in, but we can't even keep other people, terrorists, out of our country. But at any rate, so he was telling me that they, as far as travel restrictions goes, you can't get back in. If you leave that country, they now have they have almost like a lottery system. They only allow a certain amount of people back in each month. So if you happened to have traveled outside of the country right when these clampdowns began, the lockdowns, the current ones, you can't get back in to the country, which it sounds to me as though you're better off not coming back the way the restrictions that they've got going on. But on these peaceful protests, it is getting outrageous. Oh my gosh, I just saw a video this morning, and people are really coming out strong in hundreds of thousands, uniting against these restrictions, and they are just barreling through the police barricades. And the police, they've buttressed the police barricades with military now. And as I was talking to my Australian friend, I was shocked really at when he said, well, it's really not that bad with the military. You see, it's kind of overblown in the news because the military is really just being used as a little bit of partners with the police, just going into certain areas to help if there's language barriers and that sort of thing. And I said to him, do you hear yourself? This is how they slow boil us in water. You know, they're just getting the Australians used to seeing the military right now in what perhaps they might be convinced is a friendly a company with the police. But this is how they get us used to one small step under totalitarianism at a time.
You know, it's funny you're talking about the app. And I remember years ago, a company came out with an app, and it was used in a lot of cities. And the idea was you could tag your child's phone and define what's called a geofence. And your phone would give you an alert if your child's phone went outside the area you had described, which is exactly what they're doing now, except instead of keeping track of a child, it is treating the entire population as children and, you know, locking them, in effect, grounding them. It's a perfect example of recognizing that a technology may be great in the right hands, that same technology can be incredibly evil in the wrong hands. And Australia is the wrong hands right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember that technology and I'm sure it's still being used. I think it's even used in nursing homes for Alzheimer's patients. So it's a fantastic technology, but yes, you're exactly right. That's the scary thing about technology.
And, you know, and the other thing that comes to mind is how quickly this seems to have happened in Australia. A friend of my daughter's is Australian and her boyfriend is Australian. And before the latest crackdown, he was stuck. He was studying here in the U.S. He lives here in the U.S. He's originally from Australia, and he could not leave. He had gone home for a visit. He was not allowed to leave because of one of their lockdowns. Now you're telling me that even if you're an Australian citizen, you're not allowed to come home because of these crazy lockdowns. I mean, when did Australia decide it was going to return to its roots and become a prison camp?
Yeah, good point. That's right on target. And the friend that I just spoke with actually told me that the only reason he was able to get out is because he has an American-born wife who is here in the States, and she's in a long-term health care or whatnot. So it was for compassionate reasons that he was able to leave. Otherwise, he would never have been able to get out. Shocking.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, I'm sure there are people out there going, well, you know, that's Australia. That would never happen here.
Right.
I'm sorry. We are a lot closer to that. Just think of like your friend, you're the person you're talking to, you know, New York City, you're not allowed to go to a restaurant without showing your papers. And, you know, how long before you're not allowed, you know, you're not allowed to go to shop to a restaurant. You're not allowed to go to, I think, a concert. There's like a whole series of things that you're not allowed to. Really, how far of a leap is it from you're not allowed to go attend other places to you won't be allowed to go to the grocery store. You won't be allowed to go to the pharmacy. You won't be allowed to go to the doctor until you comply with our orders and take a vaccine, or I should say take a drug that they call a vaccine.
And truthfully, the vaccine is just a stepping stone to even more nefarious lockdowns on us, or control, I should say, because you've heard of, I'm sure, social credits over in China. That's right behind all of this. And this is just, the vaccines are just getting us used to even more lockdowns for any reason they want. If they don't like what you're doing, if they don't like what I'm writing, if they don't like what you're saying, that's it. They can stop us from going shopping. They're already implementing these plans. It's frightening.
Yeah, we have a version of the social credit system here, and it's called the vaccine passports, and it's called the vaccine cards. You've got United Airlines says you're not allowed to fly, or they said they'd be willing to implement, you're not allowed to fly without a vaccine. You have businesses that say, even without Biden's illegal, criminal declaration of war on the American people and the Constitution, his executive order, you still have businesses that are telling their employees, you cannot work unless you take the vaccine. You can't go to school unless you take the vaccine. In fact, I forget which school it was. I saw a report. There was a student, it was in New Jersey, I think it might have been Rutgers University. They closed down his account. They would not let him attend school without a vaccine, even though he attends virtually. He doesn't go on campus. They don't care. Lord. He didn't get the vaccine. They would not allow him to register for class. It truly is insane. And, you know, on a recent trip, I took the time to listen to a couple of audiobooks. One was 1984, the other was Brave New World. And I'm like, oh, you mean United States in 2021?
Yeah. And it's coming at such rapid speed. And, you know, the problem is that people just accept this stuff. I'm in many active groups, and we are very active on the ground boots in various different ways here locally in my community. And I lead the election integrity, but we also have the school board committees. Patriots are really stepping up. But we talked about last night, I was at a Patriot meeting, and the frustration is that it's always the same 40 people in the community that step up for these things. And it's wearing us thin. So folks, if you are not involved and you're complaining about this stuff, you need to get yourselves out of the house while you still can and join your local communities, because this is going to come fast and furious. You know, I wrote about a year and a half ago about the Gates vaccines, at that time warning people about the microchipping that they were going to be including in the vaccines. And everybody was telling me at that time, oh my gosh, you're such a conspiracy theorist. This is tinfoil hat stuff. And what they were doing at that time, Paul, which really alarmed me, is they were doing a basically a test run on our homeless and the refugees that were here in America. So this program was already in place, and it was something called ID 2020 Alliance, if you've ever heard of that. Many people still haven't heard of that, but it was an attempt to see, and their reasoning to give these vaccines, it was a vaccine program, and their reasoning to give these homeless and refugees, and which many of which were are unfortunately our veterans, of course, the reason for giving them these vaccines was to be able to put them into a program that would be able to track them for medical purposes, for all sorts of different purposes. And if they did not comply with the schedule of the vaccination program was putting them on, they would not be able to go shopping. They would not. You could see the writing on the wall with this. That was a year and a half ago. So, you know, people, all they need to do is follow certain news today to see where we're going to be at in a year from now. And most of what I write sounds like tinfoil stuff today, but I'm about a year behind in when things actually unravel here at home.
You know, you talk about the work with the homeless, and I'm reminded of a quote from William Pitt the Younger when he said, "Necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants. It is the creed of slaves." And I look at this and I say, what's happened? You scare the pants off the American people. It reminds me of a Michael Crichton book where it was a fiction book, but it was written in a way that mirrored so much of what was going on. And the whole premise was, if you want people to do something, scare them. And that's what we've got. We have such irrational fears. And I say irrational because they're based on what people say, but not based on any facts and evidence. And, you know, but they say, well, you have to, that we had to lock down. It was a necessity that we locked down, infringing on human freedoms. Then it was the mask, right? You have to wear a mask, and now it's the vaccine. Lord knows what's coming next. But which reminds me of the Martin Niemöller poem, you know, and if I could paraphrase that, you know, first they came for the lockdowns and I said nothing because I wasn't worried about lockdowns. Then they came for the maskers and I didn't say anything because I wasn't against the mask. Then they came for the vacciners, the anti-vaxxers, and I didn't say anything because, well, I didn't mind vaccines. Then they came for me and there was no one left to defend me. The vast majority of the American people either are unaware or just unwilling to do anything. And as much as we like to, I mean, it's human nature, right? We want to blame somebody. We want to point to something. It's your fault. It's Biden's fault. It's Pelosi's fault. It's Schumer's fault. It's McConnell's fault. It's Trump's fault. It's Washington's fault. It's our state house's fault. Never forgetting that each and every one of those people I've named were hired by the American people. They work for us. They are our responsibility. They are our fault. This is all our fault. And until the American people realize that, being a keyboard warrior, being a Nancy or a Karen or whatever term you want, doesn't fix anything. But the thing that I think that the Australia story brought out is something I've been talking about quite a lot recently, and that is, listen, DC is a mess, our state houses are a mess. We have to fight there, but first and foremost, we need to secure our home territory. That's our cities, our towns, and our counties. If we don't have people protecting our rights there, all the fighting in the world and DC and in our state capitals isn't going to work, because our rights are going to be eroded out from under us at the local level.
Right on. It starts at, even you can go right down to your street. People need to be aware of who their neighbors are and start communicating with them and start forming united alliances and neighborhood watch groups, because this is going to come like a thief in the night, just as the Bible says. And if we're not prepared, we've had plenty of warnings. Every time I talk to somebody who has no clue what's going on, I have no sympathy for what's coming for them, because we all need to start banding together now. We've had, you know, what you were saying, by the way, and I really loved that you said the fear is what is so controlling us. You're well aware, I write mainly about Saul Alinsky tactics. Mm-hmm. And one of his tactics is that the threat is more terrifying than the thing itself. The left knows that. Power isn't only what you have, but what the enemy thinks you have. This is how the left plays against us. And the fear that they are controlling us with is simply that. What did FDR say? There's nothing to fear but fear itself. We have to stop being so afraid of our own shadows and get out in the streets, get out in your community. I was just at a Patriot meeting last night, the one that you may be coming to here in November, and stood up, and there's somebody live streamed the video calling out our GOP rhinos. Not to say that, like you said, it's enough to blame others, because that's just following a shiny object, and it makes us not really focus on how we, the people, need to start reacting to some of this stuff. That's the problem. We usually react. We are in a big battle here in our county between the rhinos and the America Firsters. And there's so many more of us than them. They do not want to, they don't want to address the real problems, because they're in their cushy jobs. They're very happy with what their lives are like. They don't believe, and this is what I think really separates the patriots from the rhinos, is that half of us knows that we're in deep, deep trouble, to the point of losing our country. And the other half is living in la-la land. And that's really the battle that's going on, at least within the Republican Party.
You know, we looked at, like I said, Australia. Look how, we never thought it would happen there.
Right.
And I'm sure there are plenty of people who says, no, that will never happen here. Except, like you said, how often what people once called tinfoil hat talk is now, mm-hmm. is now our lives. It's now every day, it's every day how we deal with things. And I think part of it comes from, you can be ruled by fear. I've started referring to reading and studying the Constitution as an inoculation, an inoculation against tyranny. The idea being, I'm reminded when my wife worked as a bank teller, she was not trained with any counterfeit bills. She was only allowed to handle legal currency, so that when something was wrong, she'd recognize it. Even if she didn't know what was wrong, It didn't feel right. It didn't look right. It didn't smell right. Something was wrong. It raised a red flag for her to stop and investigate. And I think that's what we need to do. That's why I focus so much on the education standpoint. It's to educate people on the truth. If you recognize what the truth is, when something not true shows up, it wakes up. The same way an inoculation prepares your body for, you know, fighting off a disease. I think that's where we have to ultimately, no matter what else we do.
Sure, but education. I'm sorry. I just want to interject there that's a great analogy. But when you interject into that, if they had slowly started putting counterfeit bills into her drawer, right, mm-hmm. over a period of time, started introducing them, within a month, it wouldn't have even raised a red flag for her. And this is what we're up against.
Well, like anything else, you know, slower changes are harder to recognize, but you're still, you know, with your body or with your recognizing currency, if you don't have a good reference to compare it to, where are you going for? You know, if you're navigating, if you're out on the open ocean with no landmarks in sight, if you don't have a map that's accurate, if you don't have a compass that's accurate, you stand no chance of finding your way to the right, to your home. If you have an accurate roadmap, if you have an accurate chart, an accurate compass, eventually you notice, hey, I'm going the wrong direction. I'm in the wrong place. And, you know, those are the tools that we need to have in people's hands. Now, we've got about a minute left, Kathy. I want to make sure you have time to tell people where they can find out more about you, your writings, and what you're doing.
Thank you. And thanks for having me on, Paul. Yeah, they can actually check my my book, Rules for Deplorables, A Primer for Fighting Radical Socialism. And I actually get into Venezuela to give people an idea of what to watch for before our country goes down that same path, which we're already more than halfway down. But they can find that at www.rulesfordeplorablesbook.com. It's available on Amazon, but they've started actually censoring my book sales there, believe it or not. So I'm looking for another way to get my book out. But I'm also on AmericaOutloud.com/author/Kathy-Chamberlain. So again, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to share.
You're welcome. You can find both Kathy and me on AmericaOutloud.com. Check us out for the latest podcasts. Look for our names under our team and make sure that you know the truth of what's going on in the world around us.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends.